My God, man, like, you want to talk about crying. You're gonna cry your brains out, you know? I was bawling like a baby.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Ted, hey, it's Friday, and I don't know what happened last week, but man, my ears are still ringing. What's going on?
Not much is going on. I'm super excited about the news you shared with me today.
What did I share?
You shared our iTunes review.
Oh, yeah. PNAC11. Big shout out.
Thank you for listening, and thank you for the kind, albeit junky, words.
Yeah, they're so junky. They're so terrible. They're junky, right? Trailer junky, that is.
But he means it in the best possible way. Thank you for listening, and we hope you liked last week's episode too with the wives.
You know, and that's what I was getting at, is my ears are still ringing because, oh boy, editing that was such a busy episode. But, you know, as Ted's mentioned along the way, we have what we call SOTs, so sound on tape, and those are what we call our drops. And I'll have to say, last week, the SOTs were my favorite part of the editing last week.
You had a lot of fun with it.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a good time. I really enjoyed it. So, Ted, we have a theme this week.
Yeah. Do you feel the theme?
I do. Well, hang on. Before we get to the theme, how about we just have a little recap of what you've been up to and what I've been up to and all that stuff.
Okay, cool. So, I don't know. You go first this week. We had fun last week, but we did not go into this.
So this past week we had a technical death in the family. So the technical death is, you know, I'm a home brewer and I brew beer.
Oh no.
Yeah. So what wound up happening was my kegerator died. So I had two kegs. Well, I shouldn't say full, maybe quarter full of beer. Okay. I had a Scotch ale and I had a Belgian ale.
Was that same Scotch ale that was like over alcoholed?
Oh yeah. That was the Belgian ale.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I had this Belgian ale that just was like this, like Frankenstein beer.
It's pronounced Frankenstein.
And it was like a 14%, or it was like so ridiculous. It just stopped fermenting, and it was ridiculous. I mean, it was like a liqueur instead of a beer. So I wound up force carbing it, you know, in my kegerator. And then I had a Scotch ale that was really good, and that was in my kegerator. And, you know, and I can run three kegs out of my kegerator.
Not anymore.
Not anymore, right. So the one morning I wake up and I hear it going, and that's not a big deal to see a refrigerator running. But then when I came home, it was running, and at night it was just kept running, like way more than it normally did. So I just opened it and I'm like, it's kind of warm. So I drew a beer off of it and I thought, man, beer's warm. So what I wound up doing was I bottled whatever was in there. I put it all into bottles just to salvage it, right? So my house refrigerator is full of all these bottled beers, you know? But anyway, so needless to say, long story longer, the kegerator died and I no longer have a kegerator. I no longer have kegs, you know? So now I'm down to bottling beer, but I don't know if I'm going to replace it or not. That's a whole story. So that was my tragedy of this week. So how about you? What's going on?
You think it's just the compressor on that kegerator?
No, the compressor's working.
Hmm.
I can hear the fluid, you know, the Freon running through the system and everything, you know, and I ran it and I have no idea. You know, the whole thing was like, it's what it is. It's a chest freezer that I turned into a kegerator. So essentially it's like, technically it's called a keezer. You know, and the thing is, for the $180 it cost me to buy it, that was like 5 years ago. A new one is $180. And to have a service call, it's like more expensive to have a service call than if I just replaced it. So I don't know. Right now, I'm debating whether or not to just bottle my homebrew and not do a kegerator and then going with, you know, and selling everything off, or I don't know, whatever. But I'm in a crossroads with how to serve my beer. So how about you? What's your week?
I had a pretty good week. Topped it off the end of this week with lunch with Bryce. So went to school with Bryce, and it was super cold today. So
it was
fun. Yeah,
here too.
Well, it's always cold in Lompoc. Lompoc's like 25 degrees colder than LA.
That's on a warm day.
So I was happy to be wearing corduroys today, and corduroys and a jacket. So it was a good look today.
So when you walk, did it go voot, 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 voot?
I will tell you, it does it a lot less now than it used to.
Because you're a skinny guy.
I wouldn't go that far, yeah. But I am quite a few sandwiches lighter than I used to be.
Good to hear.
Cool. So how about these movies this week? I was very excited when I put this together because I, you know, as I do most weeks, think about how you will feel about it. And I was thinking about Ant-Man and Wasp, and something else dropped later in the week. But I was like, nah, I'll stick with these three.
What I would have to say is, though, like when you look at the three that you chose, and uh-huh. and let me say that, like, I never have a say in what comes up each week. Which is a good thing, though. I mean, and I like that because Ted picks all the movies every single week, and I just have my reactions and whatever it is. And good, bad, or indifferent, you know, this week, like, all I can say is, like, capital wow. We do have a theme. I don't know if Ted realized he had a theme, but what I would say is the theme is that we have kind of a free-spirited, adventurous, leave home, go off to battle, to view the world, to see the world, to do what you're going to do in the world, but your return is going to have turmoil. And the three movies in that regard all touch on that. Go out, do what you're going to do, and return to a world of turmoil. I mean, it's like, They're all heavy, heavy, heavy topics.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was going with a little bit of a different theme. I started down a different path. And my big thing with these movies are, these are the character dramas from actors that are in huge franchise movies in their other lives. And, you know, the one that's outside of the realm of that is Leave No Trace.
Yeah.
So Ben Foster is the one character, the one actor that isn't really in a huge blockbuster franchise. So the three movies we're doing this week are The Yellowbirds, which stars Aiden Erickson.
Alden Ehrenreich.
That's it. Yeah. Thank you.
Although we need Anne for our pronunciations, but I would say Ehrenreich or something. Right.
Well, anyway, we have Solo in a military movie, and then we have the Divergent girl, and Ben Foster has that action side to him with Lone Survivor and stuff like that. But, you know, he plays a lot more of the military guy. So I don't know. I agree with your theme, and it did end up like that. But yeah, I was aiming for something different. And I didn't exactly get to it.
The point I'm getting at with my theme was, it touched very close to home with myself. And once I saw the, like, okay, I saw the first one. I'm like, okay, the Iraq and all this kind of stuff. And then I saw Adrift and I thought, oh, wow, okay, a boat movie. And then I saw Leave No Trace. Yeah, Leave No Trace. And I thought, okay, well, he's out in the woods. But then when I started piecing together, like, okay, so you are in Iraq and you have the war and you have all the like death, destruction, enlisting in the military to have a certain experience. And all of a sudden it turns out different than what you expected and all this kind of stuff. And sailing across the country and that free spirited, or not across the country, but across the across the world from Tahiti back to San Diego. And everything that that had to offer. And then all of a sudden there's this guy that in Leave No Trace, that was kind of like, in my opinion, or the way I read it was, that was the homecoming or the return. So of the three movies, the guy went to war, the guy had his trials, and then all of a sudden he's like, I can't handle life. I got to go live off the public land, you know? Right. So like the three movies like kind of had a continuum that played through each other. And I was just like, wow, Ted really is into it this week, you know? And apparently he wasn't.
No, I definitely dialed it in. I dialed it in and I...
Yeah, yeah. No, it was great. It was great.
I was aiming dead at you. So
yeah.
I'm glad you like the selection for this week.
Well, okay. Of the three, Adrift was, you know, we're going to get to that one, but...
That's your favorite, huh?
Oh, man. Man. Well, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. Let's not go there too soon. Let's start with Yellowbirds.
All right. We'll do Yellowbirds first.
Yeah. So how about you start with what you were thinking and kind of what got you to choose this one?
Yeah. So for me, Yellowbirds was great. It starts off with your typical action war movie.
Though not a number.
Not a number in there, right? So already it set itself apart.
Yeah.
But then it has like a couple of legacy cards. It's not a legacy card, it's a quote. And the quote says, this year's Hurt Locker. And to me, that one was so evocative of, you know, a different kind of war movie. And then you have basically the turmoil of coming back home and then dealing with the families of other people. And to me, there is a real mystery here. There's a real mystery to what went on. It's like the commander of this unit doesn't take a lot of flack, and like it's almost like he's willing to kill his own people if they're going to put other lives at risk or something like that.
It's a story of a war crime.
Yeah. And to me, that was the big thing. It was a little Few Good Men, a little Hurt Locker. It had a lot of stuff. And then it has Jennifer Aniston as a mother of somebody who we're supposed to believe has gone to war and come home or not been able to, or died in action, killed in action. And to me, that blew me away and made me feel like the oldest I've ever felt in my life.
What, that Jennifer Aniston's a mom?
A mom of someone
who could go to war?
Right, in their 20s or something. Many times,
like, I'm watching, I'm like, oh my God, I feel so old. Like, you know, okay, one of my shining moments in my life is that I've never seen an episode of Friends.
So why is that a high point for you?
I have no idea, but anytime, you know, I remember being a friend, I'm like, I got to walk out, like, because, like, it got to the point where I've never seen Friends, and it got to the point where I was like, you know what, I'm just never going to watch Friends. I made that commitment.
It's like a no-hitter.
And it's like, you know, if I walk in and Friends is on, like, I can't stay, because it's just going to, it's like, for whatever reason, if I watch it, it's going to corrupt me. But you're right, though. I mean, obviously, you know, I know the cast of Friends and all this stuff.
Right.
In spite of never seeing an episode. Yeah, like, she's totally, I don't know if she's even my generation. I mean, I guess she is. I don't know what her age is. But what we're seeing, I think, is the democratization of movie making. So it comes to Sundance, and then it's going to, like, it's going to be premiered. Well, no, it was premiered at Sundance in January 2017.
Yeah.
And then it's going to have, like, this limited release in May 17th, and then be released to video on demand June 15th. So, like, why would a movie that appears to be of this caliber not be released to a wide audience in theaters?
I think it all has to do with the production company, right? It's Saban.
I don't know.
To me, it's Saban and it's DirecTV. So DirecTV paid for it to be produced. So they probably have this, they have stake in where it gets to go. And Saban is the film company behind Power Rangers. So they have more of a TV following, you know, and as far as executives go, I'm sure that's more of a TV space. So even though they make this gripping, you know, heart-wrenching, possibly great film, I don't think they have all the channels that they need to put it out as a big summer blockbuster.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so, but wow, I think they're missing the boat. It looks good, you know.
So wait, do you think that by releasing it streaming on 6/15, that you're killing the chance of a better run in the theaters?
No, what I think they're killing is just the ability to make money at it. So you release it streaming, let's say like you would do it like an HBO or a Showtime or to straight to Netflix or Amazon Prime or any of these. You know, I would say that that's not going to kill the viewership, but it might kill the revenue that you would make. You know what I mean? Because if you look at the box office, I mean, you're looking at, you know, like $12 a ticket versus $12 a month, you know, for, yeah. You know what I mean?
But I think if you're DirecTV and you're trying to compete against Netflix and Hulu and you're trying to compete on the content side.
Okay.
And you're competing with HBO, you only need a handful of high quality products like this to put into your thing that's going to be an exclusive to DirecTV or something like that, that would heighten your cachet, you know?
So what you're saying is it's the start of a paradigm shift in where people are consuming content.
Yeah, and but you say start. I mean, it's almost over.
That, you know what, though? When I said start, I was like, really, is it a start? But no, and that might be true. I mean, it's like, I wouldn't say it's over, but like, you know, because to say it's over means that the theater is irrelevant. And I don't think that's even close to being a true statement.
No.
But the shift in a paradigm is what I'm saying in the sense that you have something as high production value as a movie like The Yellowbirds coming to direct, you know, to TV, competing with Netflix, HBO, you know, for like, I don't know if you know, what would you call the home? Like the small screen or the...
Yeah, I think it's, you know, home viewing, screening,
direct to consumer. Yeah,
but I think you're right to say it's a paradigm shift, and like many pendulums that shift, I think we're possibly in this overcorrected space where we overvalue streaming services and we undervalue theatrical releases.
So theatrical releases will swing back eventually.
Yes, I think Disney doesn't undervalue theatrical. I think they've fully attacked the theater every month or every couple of months. Like Avengers Infinity War is doing gangbusters, and then, you know, 1 month after that, Solo is going to kick in and it's probably going to do amazing box office business. But I think the canary in the coal mine.
Whoa, there's a premonition.
A little yellow bird. The canary in the coal mine is like this week at Cannes. I don't know if you're following any of the news in Cannes. The Cannes Film Festival.
Uh-huh.
Netflix basically pulled out of Cannes, and because Cannes said that they weren't going to screen movies that weren't going to be theatrically released.
Right.
So in the power play between the two of them, they basically both held their ground, and now Netflix is sad that they didn't go, and Cannes lost their biggest party. And apparently some of the reporters that are there are noticing that there's no real star power. And I think the Weinsteins, you know, Harvey Weinstein was another big...
Who's he? I'm just kidding.
He was a big money guy for Cannes.
Right.
You know, Miramax was a Cannes darling. So when they lost him, when the industry lost him, and the way that he kind of schmoozed that whole French Riviera scene, they've lost a lot over the past couple of years, and it may ripple out for a couple more years. But like you said, the theatrical experience is still huge, and you know, and Disney's leveraging the fact that they can get everybody to the theaters every month, because that's, you know, those are the size properties that they have.
You know, and Disney they have some big products. So let me ask you, though, is Madagascar Disney?
Madagascar is not Disney.
It's not Disney. Okay, because right now we're having a Madagascar weekend. Tonight was Madagascar. Tomorrow is going to be Madagascar 2. And Sunday is going to be Madagascar 3.
Nice.
And so Timmy says, Daddy, but what about Madagascar like Christmas special? I'm like, kiddo, it's May. There is no Christmas special in May. But that, okay, so that's just a brief side note. Now, you know, the main thing though about this movie that I noticed was it reminds me much of American Sniper.
Oh yeah. So, I never saw that.
Are you serious? You never saw American Sniper? Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you got
it. Is it good?
Oh, it's incredible. Another true story. And, you know, there's probably been two military... Well, I should say military. There's probably been two movies / TV series that I've cried, you know?
Uh-huh.
I'm not a crier like you mentioned last week. You're not a crier. I'm not a crier. Or maybe you mentioned 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. But no, Band of Brothers... Okay, you watched a whole series of Band of Brothers, no big deal. Well, I don't mean big deal like the story is not a big deal, but I mean, I'm talking like as far as crying.
Right.
So the last episode, they talk about where the guys wound up in life, you know, like this guy played baseball and then like he was their buddy who played baseball and he got killed and they show him running for second and then he like vanishes, you know, like that was like the metaphor of like, here's how he got killed. Yeah. I'll tell you, I was bawling like a baby on the last episode of Band of Brothers. You watch American Sniper. And they show the funeral procession. You know, they go through the whole movie about how this guy is like the best sniper of all American history and all this stuff. And you're all like,
yeah.
You know, all this who is stuff, you know. And you get to the point where he decides he's trying to help these veterans who, you know, have some mental illness or whatever from like going to combat and all this. And he winds up getting killed. I don't know if you know the story or not, but he winds up getting killed.
Yeah.
The last like 5 minutes is like his funeral procession through Texas as they go through and there's everybody like waving flags and cheering him on and all this stuff while he's in the hearse.
Right.
My God, man. Like, you want to talk about crying. You're going to cry your brains out, you know? But anyway, there's a scene in that movie where he comes back after a tour and his wife's there and they're going to the mall and people are driving around and life goes on as typical in just American society of how it goes. And he makes the comment like, that's the problem with this war is that no one cares because the war's going on. People are dying, losing their lives, they're fighting, they're doing all the stuff they're doing, all the psychological traumas, everything that's happening. And he is angry and he has this like he has a psychological impact.
Yeah.
That leads him to the point where can't comprehend why American society behaves the way it does when there are American soldiers fighting and dying in wars on the other side of the sea, you know, like in Iraq, Afghanistan, so on.
Yeah.
The Yellowbirds is much the same way in that it's the same thing. This guy comes home, whatever the war traumas, the war crimes and everything, the problems with the whole thing and the dangers of it is that people have died and people are dying and the war's going on, yet American society continues without any thought or very little thought of what's going on in Iraq or Afghanistan, other than the evening news at best. And it's just, it's one of those things where it's a story of a small percentage of the population, whereas the rest of the population isn't there to really even care about what these people are doing or feeling.
And it's just breaking down two families, right? It's these two mothers, Toni Collette and Jennifer Aniston. And to me, it's there. We see the war through them. We see the impact of what it does to families, you know? So to me, that was the moving part, you know. It's Mother's Day weekend, so it was another...
You know, and there's another theme, you know, but the thing is, like, if you look at the wars of the past, right? So World War II may have been identified as like the GI generation that fought the war of the century that changed the paradigm of the future, right?
Yeah.
Korea would have been like the forgotten war, mm-hmm. or is the forgotten war. Vietnam maybe was the like controversial war, you know, should we been there, should we not, and all this stuff. Right. I think the current war, like with Iraq, Afghanistan, and terrorism, and whether it's George Bush, Obama, or Trump, or whichever president, you know, I mean, I think that's irrelevant, but I think it's like the 1% war. And what I mean by that is, you know, the 1% is the soldiers and the families who have decided it was their duty or to take upon their duty to go fight that war.
Yeah.
Whereas the 99% just aren't participating. And when you look at like World War II, so if you go back and you look at It's a Wonderful Life, you know, Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
You know, the story of him was, you know, he wanted to go off, see the world and do great things. His brother was Medal of Honor recipient. And Jimmy Stewart's character, George Bailey, he wound up, you know, doing rubber drives and paper drives and metal drives. And he did everything he could on his end of it for the war effort, and the whole town participated. Well, nowadays, like, people just don't participate in the war effort the way we used to, you know, right. And maybe it's because we're wealthy and affluent. We don't need to do that. I mean, I don't know what the reason is, but, you know, and we just take the terrorist attacks as they come, and maybe France and Italy and us and everybody takes their attacks. But you see the emotional trauma in this guy's life when his buddy Murph dies, and Murph's mom, who's played by Jennifer Aniston, and she just like, you know, hey, whatever happens, you know, she says to Murph's buddy, she says, you know, like, I want you to be the first one to tell me. And right. Oh, totally emotional. Like, it's brutal, you know?
And if you're Alden, Brandon Bartle or whatever, you know, where does your allegiance lie, right? Are you with your captain because, you know, he's the one who's protecting you and trying to let everybody live? Are you with your buddy who might have died under these crazy circumstances, you know, or friendly fire or some version of some kind of war crime?
Well, and that's right. In the trailer, they leave the war crime very ambiguous.
Right.
So what they're saying is, here comes the captain to, you know, do this investigation. But I kind of read it as, you know, the investigation is more so that there's no war crime. Well, no, let me back up. There is a war crime, but the way the trailer plays out is that the war crime is trying to be covered up to say that, hey, I'm here to support you and to do all these things. You know, your son died and whatever might have happened. But CID, you know, the Criminal Investigations Department and all this stuff, essentially what's happened is to say that the war crime has occurred, but the story is more about, like, we're going to investigate it in such a way that it's going to appear that we're on your side, but the war crime is more about covering up what happened. So nobody comes out to get the living in trouble.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's all, you know what it's I mean? Like, it's like Tillman when Tillman was.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You know, he was such a high profile soldier that, you know, he went down in that weird, like, friendly fire mortar attack or whatever it turned out to be. But obviously a horrible thing, but covering up wasn't going to bring him back. You know what I mean? They telling a story of some other way that he passed away when the truth is out there was worse. So I think they oftentimes the higher ups in the military, they go for a PR solution rather than truly investigating something like that.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing that I got out of this movie is that, you know, the enemy a lot of times, okay, so you have, you know, I don't care if it's Nazis or it's, you know, Viet Cong, or you're looking at, you know, modern day you know, Israeli terror, Israeli, what am I saying? Arab terrorists and all this stuff. You know, you're looking at all this stuff, right? So you have all these right. different enemies that we've identified. But I think the real enemy is the unknown, okay?
Yeah.
So you go to combat and you have no clue what you're fighting for, who the enemy is. I mean, you know it's the other, whatever the other yeah. is defined as. And so you're fighting that other, and that other becomes the enemy because for no other reason than the other is an unknown individual.
Right.
Had you known that person, if you had the opportunity to just sit down and talk with them, you'd probably find them as just an interesting person who is somebody that you probably have things in common with.
Yeah.
You know, but for no other reason than they're just identified as the other. And that's where we come up with things like, we would come up with derogatory terms, you know, krauts and gooks and ragheads and whatever people call them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's for no other reason. The reason we come up with those names is because if we have those names, we dehumanize them, and then it's easier to kill somebody who identifies with them as, who identifies as, you know, like
less than human.
Yeah. Yeah, a raghead is somebody less than human, so it's easier to kill them. We don't have to worry about identifying with them, and then when we go home, we don't feel bad about what we did. You know what I mean? Right. Because the enemy is the unknown that our political people above us has tasked us with moving forward to say, these are the people you need to go kill. Well, and then you might say, well, why? You know, like, because my government doesn't agree with them and their government doesn't agree with them. And then, like, here's just like two citizens of a country who just got stuck shooting at each other, you know? I mean,
yeah, yeah. I think that's why, you know, some of my favorite war movies definitely follow that structure.
Platoon.
Platoon definitely has that. Yeah, it's an internal struggle.
Yeah.
I was thinking more like Apocalypse Now.
Oh, because yeah.
Kurtz was definitely one of ours before he went native or whatever it was that
he
did.
I know what you mean, yeah.
And then Full Metal Jacket, you know, there's a lot going on there. And, you know, they have the enemy that is, you know, are the Viet Cong. But definitely there's a lot of internal, the whole first half of the movie is about Private Pyle. So Vincent D'Onofrio turns into an enemy, you know, through the course of that. And then even I would say Three Kings kind of falls in that space too.
Three Kings. Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. You're right. You're right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, no, because remember they had the interrogator. And when you were talking about, like, you know, finding common ground, I mean, Mark Wahlberg and the interrogator basically have a chat with each other, and they can't even, like, you know, bring themselves to fight each other after that, you know?
But consider Stanley Kubrick, though. I mean, he did Full Metal Jacket, right? So Stanley Kubrick, the theme to all of his movies is humanity's creations destroy them. You know, I mean, when you look at 2001 A Space Odyssey, you know, man creates robots or computers, whatever, and the computer
AI,
kills them.
Yeah.
AI, exactly.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
You know, we create in Full Metal Jacket, we create the soldier, in a sense. I know it was the Marines, but whatever. We create a soldier, and the soldier is what destroys us.
What is your major malfunction, numbnuts?
Right.
Clockwork Orange, you know, we create a society or a culture, and that culture is what implodes on us. You know, I mean, like, yeah, Stanley Kubrick is just brilliant.
Yeah, loved it.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I mean, he's incredible.
Oh, and A Few Good Men, right? A Few Good Men is another classic thing where they talk of, I mean, this one really rang A Few Good Men to me because they're investigating, you know, and it's the I don't know who the guy was that was the sergeant who's talking to his men is a little like, you know, Jack, you know, you need him on that wall kind of thing.
You can't handle the truth.
Yeah, you need me on this wall. It's not because I'm right, I'm wrong, I'm ethical, or I'm legal, or I'm moral. All that's out the window. You need me here to keep you safe.
Right.
you know, the ends justify the means. We all want to go home alive. Nothing else matters, you know? When they bring in the Hurt Locker and all that stuff, I mean, it really rings true to the psyche of the American, you know, military guy who comes home. And all of a sudden, there's like new cell phones and new cars and different Mustangs. And you're just like, holy cow, like the world is different. Like 4 months goes by because we would be in the desert for 4 months. We wouldn't see like the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have no contact with the outside world, you know, for like months on end. And we come home. And the entire world was different in a 4 month span of time.
Wow.
But there'd be guys that would go that. And the point is, like, we would be deployed or well, not deployed, but we would be in training for 4 months. And that 4 months would be getting guys ready to go to Iraq. And they would go to Iraq for 15 months. So if you think about it, like, those dudes would be out of contact for like 19 months, you know?
Yeah.
Like, close to 2 years. Year and a half easy.
Right.
And they come back and they're just all effed up, you know? And it's like, and people say, well, how does that happen, you know? Well, nothing. I mean, okay. War aside, you know, like, let's put the whole, like, death and destruction aside. You leave and come back a year and a half later, and, like, there's new cars and new phones and new computers and new, like, technology and YouTube. All this stuff is new, like, you've never seen before.
Right, right.
Dude, life is weird. You know what I mean? I experienced it in like just a 4 month span of time. And like, it was just bizarrely crazy. I couldn't imagine 15 to 18 months, what that would do to somebody.
And then people get caught in that cycle where they just re-up because it's so strange and so different that they know what those 15 months are like. And then if you go back and re-up, then at least you're familiar with it, you know?
Yeah, that's another part of our theme. You know, when you go back to the... When you look at Leave No Trace,
yeah,
getting into that movie a little prematurely, but you are in a world that you don't comprehend, so you re-up and you go back to this combative world, and you keep coming back to the regular world, and you keep re-upping to go back into the world that you're familiar with, and maybe that's like kind of a caged animal, you know? And
yeah,
like you're caged in an uncaged kind of a way, and oh man, totally bizarre. And even adrift, like you're caged in the sailboat. I mean, like, talk about themes this week. Wow.
So I think we both like Yellowbirds.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I guess if it's streaming right away, we don't have to worry about. We'll definitely see it.
I don't know. We'll see. It looks like a tough one to watch, but I'll probably watch it.
Cool.
Yeah. So do you have a three word review?
I do have a 3 word review. This so for the Yellowbirds, my 3 word review is brothers before mothers.
Is that? I hope that's not like bros before hoes.
Yeah, it is exactly like bros before hoes.
Terrible, terrible. But you know what though? I think though, like bros before hoes, like and brothers before mothers. I think like the mother and the hoe part of that whole thing is, you know, it's like it's as if to say that. Hoes are other women that maybe you're banging or something. I don't know what it is, but like, let's just hope your mom doesn't fall in that.
That's why it's brothers before mothers.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like the upscale version.
It's a fine line. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. It's the upscale version of bros before hoes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Adrift. Let's move. How about we move forward? We abandon the Yellowbirds, which I want to leave no soldier behind. Oh, and really quick, the cadence, you know, when they sing the cadence in the beginning and the end?
Yeah.
We never sang Yellowbird, whatever, you know, like that wasn't part of our cadence of my units or anything. But man, right. I'll tell you though, when you hear that like tempo of the cadence, wow, that brings back some like, that's intense.
You know that? You know sound? You know the
Well, it brings back like it brings back all the songs that you know. You know what I mean? Like you could just you can forget the language of it, put in your language, but the tempo brings in so much like
memory,
personal history and memory. Yeah. Yeah, it's intense. But anyway, you know, but okay, Adrift. Yeah, we have this woman and her boyfriend, fiance, soon to get married, sailing a yacht from Tahiti to San Diego, and they get caught in a hurricane. Take it from there.
Yeah, it's an amazing, this is one of those real life stories, right?
Oh, man.
So it's this based on true story, the most catastrophic hurricane in recorded history, and just the struggle to survive. You know, it's an amazing survival story.
Wow.
A love story, you know, and I just think the effects throughout this whole thing. This is the last trailer for this movie. I saw there are a couple other trailers, and the trailer's doing a lot of heavy lifting and a lot of work in here. Establishing their relationship, showing the comfort between the two of them and how great their lives are. And then it just plunges them into this huge struggle. This this production company, STX Entertainment, a friend of mine works for them. And they're really like putting out a lot. They're becoming more consistent with their releases and stuff. So I appreciate their continued growth. You know, like the A24 is a little further along than they are, but
right.
They've had a few of these. I think they just came up with the I Am Pretty, that movie from last month. So they have a wide range of genres and subject matters, and I'm excited for it. I don't think I'm going to see it. It's not my kind of movie, but the trailer almost pushed me over the edge to go see it.
Well, what I would say is the trailer. So, okay, every trailer I've reviewed for this podcast, I've probably watched, you know, like I would watch it, I'd rewind, I'd watch, you know, over and over again.
Yeah.
And I would get to the point where, you know, I want to see what I'm going to see, and I'm going to record, and I'm going to review, and I'm going to do all this stuff. And then, like, I'm trying to learn a trailer and all this stuff, you know?
Right.
With this trailer, one go through, I was done. I did not rewind it. I did not do anything else.
Oh, why is that?
I don't think emotionally I could have handled it. So I watched it, and I was at the edge of my seat for the entire trailer. And the emotional, well, let me back up. The visceral reaction that I had to this trailer, I didn't want to take away from my review and my notes by watching it over and over, because I felt that if I continued to review it and go back and look and watch and all this stuff, that it would have caused me to have a different reaction, or maybe a better way to put it is report on a different reaction than my initial reaction.
Oh, okay.
And I felt my initial reaction, because it was so intense, was the best reaction. You know what I mean? So,
oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And I felt like I wanted to report on my first viewing, because what I do is every time I watch every trailer the full way through, and then I go back and I watch and I pause and I, you know, I do all the stuff I do. Right.
Right.
Like, for example, the one coming up when they show the newspaper.
Yeah.
And Leave No Trace, they show the newspaper, and I'm like, I want to see what that says. I pause it, you know, and
yeah, yeah,
and all this stuff. But with this movie, though, is I ran straight through and I thought, you know what? I don't need to do it again. And after I watched it, this was the trailer I did 26 episodes now of doing Trailer Junkies podcast. This was, so, okay, 26 episodes, roughly 3 episodes
three movies an episode.
So we're talking like 90 some odd, you know, movies.
Yeah.
This is the one that I could say with certainty I did the most research on.
Awesome.
I was like completely taken aback by the story. I learned, you know, all the stuff I learned, you know, Hurricane Raymond, how bad it was. The fact it was 1983, which just blows me away, and now it's right. coming out. And, you know, I mean, not only that, but, like, I learned what a pitch pole was, where, like, the stern pitches forward over the bow, and, you know, essentially that's, like, ass over tea kettle. You know, could you imagine being on a little tiny, and all of a sudden there's like a 50-foot wave in, or whatever. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I'm just guessing a 50-foot wave, maybe 100 feet for all I know. But like, all I got to say is, you know, long story longer, this trailer put me so at the edge of my seat. The story behind it, everything I learned about it, it drove me to do as much research as I ever did on a movie. Her story, I mean, even it was so effing tremendous. I wish we were explicit so I could drop F-bombs. I mean, it was really, I mean, I just thought it was just great. Like the whole thing, beginning to end, of how they set up their relationship to yeah. her loss and everything. And I have more to talk about, but I don't want to hijack it. It's your turn.
Yeah, so I think that's really interesting that you would watch it all the way through and then not go back. It kind of it's emblematic of the actual movie, right? It's like you were on it for the ride of the trailer and you wrote it out and then you didn't turn back at the end. You just you experienced it.
Oh my God, I was done.
And you were spent.
Oh.
And to me, that wave, that swell or whatever, that wall of water that rises in front of you, that is amazing.
The funny thing is, I saw that. I'm like, I'm done. I can't watch it again. You know, like emotionally, like I can't handle this. No, you're so right. You're so right.
Do you think that they break out in song and dance in the middle of this?
Break out in song and dance?
I'm only joking. Because
I know
the writer,
you are. I know
the, you the writers. The writers of this. Did you hear? Did you find that, or did you research the story and not the writers? The writers of this also wrote for Moana.
Oh no, really? So I was strictly the story. I didn't go into the
business.
I didn't go into the business marketing filmmaking. I was strictly the story.
And that's why we're a good balance, right?
Yeah, because you're the Hollywood side. I'm the everyman side.
Right. So yeah, so these two twin brothers from Hawaii wrote this movie and obviously adapted it from the real life story of this event. But yeah, I think the performances in the trailer were great. You know, she sells it as, you know, this despair, you know? So I just, it was an amazingly evocative, emotional trailer.
And what I want to point out too is in the show notes, we'll put the picture of the real couple and the picture of the casted couple. Because, and the reason I say that, so through my research, both couples, like, it's remarkable how much they looked alike and everything. And to say that, you know, it's not just the story and everything, but how they casted the people and it was just, so how much do you know of the story?
I don't know much. I just know that it was a real life, a true story. And then that's about it.
Okay. So I probably read about, I didn't get the book, obviously, you know, the book's a little bit past, but I probably read like literally about 3 hours worth of this, you know, because I was so enamored by it. You know, I was just so like taken aback.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to give spoilers, but I don't think these are necessarily spoilers. So she finds him in the water and all this stuff. Uh-huh. Well, she never found him in the real story. And, you know, spoiler alert, sure. But what I think it is, so there was a huge part of her story that dealt with her inner voice.
Yeah.
And the biggest part of all this, like, I mean, there got to a point where, you know, they had a rifle on board and stuff, and she had the rifle in her mouth with, you know, the thing loaded with the round and everything, and she was going to blow her brains out. Mm. And it got to the point where her inner voice is more or less what saved her. So a lot of what I read from the trailer, what I see, what I know of the story and all this stuff is that anytime he's in the image, he's in the picture and he's in the story after the storm, it, you know, has to do with her inner voice telling her, keep going, you know, like, I'm your rock and
yeah,
you need to move forward because the only way you're getting out of this is to be strong. So I think the whole point of the story when they show in the trailer of her finding him and stuff, I think that's all metaphor for her
that inner voice.
Her inner voice to say, you're not here, you are dead, or you're gone, you know, well, which essentially is dead. But
yeah.
And you're the reason I keep going. And I'm going to get to, you know, Hawaii, because that was her whole thing, because of a sextant that, you know, she found a sextant and a watch in like the rubbish of the wreckage. And her premonition of his voice is what kept her going to the point that she finally found refuge by a Japanese sailing ship that ultimately led her to, you know, Hawaii and stuff. So, but all in all, wow, amazing story.
And, you know, like, we haven't seen the movie, but how it would be, to me, it would make it a better movie. And I say a better movie because I'm guessing that they didn't go this route. But in the movie, in the trailer, we see that she finds him and she drags him back to the ship. And, you know, how great would it be if when she's discovered at the end of the movie that maybe when she's recovering, she's like looking for him and she gets out in the ship and she's like, where's my fiance? Where's my, you know, my boyfriend? And then they say, you were recovered alone. You're the only one on the boat.
Oh, it was like an illusion or something.
Yeah. It was like too much. I drank too much seawater, but it kept me alive because it was the hope. And he, you know, his voice was so strong in me that I could, you know, that it helped me persevere. It helped me push through.
You know, and everything I researched and read, that's about how it was.
Wow.
From what she was saying was like, he was so strong in me that I was alone. And she was like catatonic with her head injury. And she couldn't read for like, you know, six, 8 years after, you know. And
oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. No, she had like some serious like brain injury.
Brain damage.
She had like severe blood loss. And like I said, she was catatonic to the point where she was almost dead herself. I think it was like 27 hours from the time that the storm hit to where she woke up, like differential. But yeah, from what you just said to what the movie is, I think that's kind of how it plays out, is like, no, you were hallucinating this whole time. And that's kind of what brought you through the trauma, in a sense. I mean,
yeah.
The story is, I mean, I almost want to, you know, I want to get the book. It was just like, like I said, I spent 3 hours reading different articles and blogs and all kinds of stuff about this woman. Okay, so a quick aside, I know it won't take long. We usually take long, but so she has a sextant as a pendant around her neck as a necklace, because a sextant is what she used to find her way to Hawaii.
Right.
And, you know, a sextant is like a centuries old sailing device. Funny thing is, you know, Clarissa always says like, oh, would you ever get a tattoo? And I say, you know, there's nothing in the world that I like enough to get me a tattoo. And sometimes I'm like, you know, like a broken bicycle chain on my arm or something. And, you know, because like when I flex, I'll break the chain, you know, whatever. Right. But I mean, the thing is, like, there's nothing in the world I you know, that I like enough to get me a tattoo. I'll tell you what. I go through a hurricane with 100-foot swells or whatever the hell they had. Lose my spouse, the whole nine. I come out on the other end alive, and it was a sexton that brought me there. You're goddamn right. I'm going to put a sexton. I'm going to tattoo a sexton on my shoulder.
There you go.
You know, I mean, I'm saying though, like, that is something, that damn thing would have saved my life to the point I would actually get a tattoo. You know what I mean?
I think you should do that, like, bicycle chain as a band around your arm, like barbed wire, you know?
You know, I think about it because, like, I'm all in on bicycles. I don't even have a car, you know? Like I'm so in on bicycles, I may as well. Like, it's just, it's who I am, you know? But anyway, no, you know, last thoughts I have is this woman is so hardcore that she still sails today. And the funny thing, so she did an interview with the Chicago Tribune that I read. So she goes through this whole trauma, right? She still sails, right? You know what she's afraid of?
What?
After this traumatic event, she won't fly. You tell me, like... Woman goes through like a crazy category five hurricane, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so she'll still sail, but damn it, she just won't fly.
My question to you is, do you go to Chicago news sources first when you're looking for articles?
Oh, no. I Googled. No, it's funny you say that. Yeah, I get it, because I'm from Chicago. But no, like, I Google, you know, like, the story, you know, like, the story dot Ted Willett, you know, that's how I do it. And I'm like, what would Ted Willett look for? Nothing ever comes up, but.
Nope.
Yeah. But no, you know, and it was just, she happened to do, like, you know, the Tribune happened to do, like, some big exposition on her, and that's just what it was. But yeah, you know, I like you said, I'm not going to see it in a theater. It's a narrow release. I don't know why, but I will guaranteed I'm going to watch this when it comes to streaming.
That first week streaming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Dude, brutal. Incredible.
So I will give you, to cap it out, my three-word review for a Drift trailer, and it's that wave dough.
Wait, that wave dough?
It's what the kids do. It's what the millennials say now when they want to talk about something. It's dat, but you know, it's a bastardization of that.
Yeah, D-A-T.
Right, and then you put in the subject in the center. And then dough instead of D-O-E instead of though, you know, T-H-O-U-G-H.
From our first movie of The Yellowbirds, you're talking about, you're talking about Delta Alpha Tango.
That wave dough. It's that wave, that big ass wave.
Wow. Okay. That wave dough. So I got it. Sure.
I spent time on these.
Anyway, what was the first one?
Brothers Before Mothers.
Oh, Brothers Before. You spent time on both of these?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so how about we get to the last guy who has psychological trauma from his time of service in the Marine Corps in Leave No Trace?
Yes. So Leave No Trace.
Was this a true story or I couldn't tell?
I couldn't tell either. I don't think it is, but it was a gripping drama that made me believe that this could easily happen.
Oh, totally. Yeah, no, I agree with you.
It is in this realm of possibility that takes out any kind of worry about whether it's based on a true story or not. And it's another gripping drama that just has this heartbreak in it where he's doing the best he can. And it's, you know, but he has responsibilities. So he's not shirking on his responsibilities. He doesn't know how to cope with the society stateside. So he does what he was trained to do and lives off of the land. And, you know, the fact that he has his, you know, preteen daughter in tow is just another part of the tragedy, you know?
It's like Rambo with his daughter. I mean, he's just living out the land, you know, but the thing is, though, it's like, our theme is almost a double entendre because we have the military, free-spirited, whatever theme that kind of goes along with the life I try to live.
Yeah.
And then our week-to-week theme of the family or the familial drama of, you know, a place like home, leave no trace with the family. And
oh, and then that kid like Jake, right?
A kid like Jake, right. We have all these different family dramas that play out. I mean, I couldn't help but feel sorry for the protagonist in that he's sitting there with that lie detector test or whatever the hell it was, or that thing collecting his data.
Yeah.
How do you feel, you know, every day you wake up, you feel great about your life. He's like, yes, you know? And it's like, like, I couldn't help but feel for him because it's like, just leave the dude alone. Like, what is the difference between a national forest and our city streets when it comes to homelessness? And why is it that, you know, the mentally ill, you know, because, I mean, let's face it, like, a lot of our homeless are mentally ill. So when you look at the homelessness on our city streets,
yeah,
I mean, you're talking about, you know, drug addiction and meth or alcoholism, whatever it might be. And legally, we don't bother these people. But goddamn it, you are camping on public land. You know, we're going to arrest you. We're going to take you in. You can't live here. You know, that whole thing. And it's just like, yeah, I just don't, like, I don't know if it's a pitfall in the story or if maybe that really is how things are, you know?
I think it's probably closer. That's why I said this one really falls in the realm of possibility. I see it as, you know, these are parklands, you know, it is a technical, I don't know if it's a federal thing, but yeah, but it is something that you could see happening very easily. And to me, it's so heartbreaking and yet hopeful when the daughter, you know, basically gives him that come to Jesus pep talk at the end. And, you know, and she's basically telling him that he can do this. You know, we could live in society. We can just pretend. We can just do the things that society wants us to do, not because we want to do them, but because, you know, we're strong, you know? And
yeah.
And I think that, to me, that really, it said something about the way that he was raising her. And I think I'm sure that was a part of the driving force from the Rangers, is like, oh, if you were just a crazy guy out in the woods by yourself, you know, that's one thing, like, we'll take you in and we'll, you know, slap you on the wrist. But now you have a daughter with you, and it's like, that's added complication. You're endangering the life of a minor, you know? And it just showed the fact that you can, again, teach your children outside of traditional means and have a strong individual, build a strong person without the structures of what we deem as normal society.
You know, as an educator, so they have the scene where they're talking about, you know, the, I don't know if it's a school psychologist or a school teacher or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But they're testing her, and she goes, oh, wow, you're really smart. You know, like,
you're ahead.
You're ahead of where you need to be. And I thought about that, and I'm like, really? Like, kids need to be somewhere, you know? And it didn't really, like, jive with me, you know? And maybe I'm nitpicking, but maybe it's like, you know, you're ahead of your same age peers, or you're ahead of your grade level, but, like, where you need to be? Like, I don't even know where people need to be in life.
Right. I took that. So I, too, like, thought that was an awkward turn of phrase.
Yeah.
But to me, it seems like that it was purposeful. So there's this movie, Cookie Jar. It's a Netflix, like, a kid movie kind of thing. It's okay. About two people that are in a debate class, right? So one of them wants to go to Yale, and the other one wants to go to Harvard. So they're only two people in debate class, and then they want to build it up. So it's a typical, like, movie of the week kind of space, you know, kid movie,
yeah, tween, yeah, yeah,
movie. But the girl has this one phrase where they're building up their debate team, And, you know, she turns to them and they're getting ready for the debate. And she says,
is anyone not ready?
And to me, it was like, you know, it was very prototypical for her as a character, what we've built up to this point. And it was the perfect thing that this character would say to her teammates, not to encourage them, but to discourage them from not being ready. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she's
trying to.
Yeah.
She was trying to single out the weak, you know, and it was so great because we've learned so much about her in the first half of the trailer, you know, and to me that's where trailer editors and you know executives and movie makers can pluck these scenes out that show you exactly where you as the audience are put in the position with the main characters. So you're caught off guard and you're like, oh, that's a negative way to say that. Or that's an odd way to approach me with your comments and your conversation. So I like that. And I was a little off put by it, but then I thought of it in context of hearing it as the father and the daughter. And then it, you know, it's off-putting, but then it's also a proud moment.
It's funny because Clarissa and I, we always talk, and when I say always, I mean in the definitive, because, you know, one thing I don't like to say is like always or never, you know, and stuff, because it just seems so too absolute.
Right.
But I could say with certainty that we always talk about like traveling and the free spirited side of life. And we talk about crazy stuff like, oh, we're going to sell our house and we're going to take the boys and we're going to go travel the world and all this stuff. And then we stop and we think about it rationally, like, you know, that might be what we want to do, but why would we deprive them of establishing, you know, friendships? Or something,
right.
You know, so it's like I rode my bicycle across the country and down the coast and I did all these, you know, and Clarissa and I met in Costa Rica and we did all these things, you know, that we do with these travels that we love so much. And, you know, we think about it, though, it's like we get what we get for the time we get it for where we are in our lives. And we can't just throw caution to the wind as much as I'd love to, but we can throw caution to the wind because like if I jump, everybody jumps, you know what I mean? That's kind of how it is, right? Like if I go off the springboard, like everybody comes with me. That's just, you know, the way our family's set up, you know, and she's the same way. If she goes, I go, you know, and everybody goes with her. And, you know, a lot of it is not just can we do it or can't we, as far as like the financial side of things, but it's also like who are our kids identifying with and who are the friendships, you know. We had the opportunity and the pleasure and all this stuff to make friends with kids in the neighborhood and play baseball and, you know, and whatever sports and all this stuff, like. And to take that away from our kids and travel the world, yeah, they'd see everywhere, you know, they would see everywhere doing everything.
Right.
But they would get to know no one. And because we'd be moving so much and stuff. And that's kind of what I got out of this movie was, or this trailer and the movie, of course. But this poor girl is, you know, her. It's almost like her dad takes on, or maybe the girl takes on, like, a number of different roles, right?
Yeah.
So she's like the daughter, of course. You know, I think that's the obvious role. I think another role, which is obvious but slightly less obvious, is the companion role. You know, like, where's the mom in the whole thing? I mean, they might explain that out. Like, she got killed. They got divorced. I mean, who knows what, but.
Right.
And then I think the third role is, like, almost she's, like, the prisoner role in that, like, Stockholm syndrome kind of way of defining it. You know, like, yeah, he's my dad. I'm hanging out because if I leave, I don't want to leave. He'll be alone. That's the companion side. And then he's got me captive and I can't leave because it's Stockholm syndrome. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
I think I agree with for the first two, definitely companionship and definitely, you know, father-daughter space. But I really think at the end, you know, he has built her up both in type of person that she is and in her spirit and her hopefulness. He's put her in a place where she's stronger than even he is. It's kind of like when you see the shortcomings in yourself and you don't want to, but you live vicariously through your children and you kind of push them maybe into the thing that you knew you couldn't do yourself.
Yeah.
So it's a shortcoming for yourself, and you know how personally painful that is to have a shortcoming that you can recognize and realize. So then you're especially attuned to it in your child, that you're not going to let them have that shortcoming because you know the pain that has caused you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think at the end, you know, we see that she's going to be okay. You know, I think she's a strong actress, and this director, as you could kind of see through some of the cards, you know, she did The Winter's Bone, which was Jennifer Lawrence's first big movie. So, and then they also allude to it where another young Jennifer Lawrence, you know, in this, and she definitely has this strong sense of character and space and commanding a scene without saying things, you know, and just a quiet confidence that I think is, you know, it's definitely in this, her as an actress, but I think it's also in this director. You know, she's finding these, she's casting perfectly, and then she's finding a way to get into these young actresses and tweak something so that they give this performance that is so powerful.
Okay, yeah. So in other words, what you're saying is that the daughter is in, you know, essentially a prisoner of her dad's situation, her dad's psyche.
Yeah, I think that she's broken out of it, and she's trying to mentor him out of it as well. You know, it's like
almost like a role reversal.
Definite role reversal. You know?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool. So I don't have much else. I mean, if you don't, do you have a three word review?
I have a 3-word review for Leave No Trace. And it's Daddy Daughter Way.
Daddy Daughter Way.
And Daddy Daughter Way, it's kind of that whole idea of the master, the student becoming the master. So it has that kung fu feel and theme.
Yeah.
You know, it has no kung fu pace, no kung fu anything else, but Daddy Daughter Way felt like a title of like this student becoming the master. That was your favorite of my 3 reviews for the night. I can say, right?
You know, I would say of the 3 movies, I would say Adrift was by far my favorite
your
movie.
Your favorite? Uh-huh.
As far as 3-word reviews, I'm probably between like, you know, Adrift and Leave No Trace. But I think ultimately, though, this was a solid week as far as movies. There's been weeks where, you know, some of the movies are good, not so good, you go with it. Lots to talk about, maybe not necessarily emotionally impactful. This week?
Right.
Wow, this week was intense. Yeah, no, very good week. I love the numerous themes we were able to intertwine in, you know, all these movies. I think ultimately, you know, if I had to choose,
yeah,
probably Adrift might be the movie I'd be most interested in.
Mm-hmm.
But I would definitely see all of these. And the thing is, though, I would reserve them all for streaming. I hate to say it that way. You know, like box office, they're not going to hit the box office with me. Knowing, you know, my situation with just how the house runs, the boys, how far, you know, like where we live to where movie theaters are. But generally speaking, yeah, I would definitely watch all these.
But the end of the month, you're definitely going to go to the theater to see Solo, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we already have plans for the in-laws to come, watch the boys. The funny thing is, so Solo weekend, you know, there's going to be people there like first night, you know, like camping out and all this stuff, whatever it is. We're definitely going on Sunday, you know, the last night of Memorial weekend, you know, like whatever it is, but... That's just the way it goes when you have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, you know, and you got to find babysitters and stuff. But yes, Solo is a for sure, barring anything like outrageous.
Right. It's so funny because Audrey has, she just got her iPod Touch or whatever. And she put her first thing on our family calendar, and it's May 24th, and it says last day of school. So
nice.
The 25th is the first day of their summer break. And I don't know, I think we're probably going up north again. So we're probably going to be away, and I won't get to see Solo for free.
Los Gatos?
Yeah, I think Los Gatos, probably.
Yeah.
But it will... we'll probably see it up there.
But Ted, okay, let's just, yeah, you know, for the sake of argument, let's say $12 a head, right?
Uh-huh.
All right, $48. But my God, man, look where you get to stay. Your avoidance of hotel cost outweighs the cost of going to the movies like tenfold, like orders of magnitude, you know?
There you go. That's true. That's
yeah,
true.
So you can't deny it, you know, but oh, and hey, really quick. So
yeah,
the family and the boys and stuff, we watched Ferdinand last week.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I know, because your kids did our Ferdinand episode.
Yes.
Like, I don't know what that was.
Week
like
episode, 4 or like, something? 5?
5.5.6. You know, I don't know what it was. But yeah, we did do Ferdinand. And tonight was a Madagascar night. And I think talking to the boys, tomorrow is Madagascar 2. And uh-huh. Sunday is going to be Madagascar 3.
Have they seen all of them again? Have they seen them all before? Yeah.
Oh, right? No. Tonight's the... I haven't seen Tonight was my first seeing of Madagascar. So...
Awesome. What did they think about Ferdinand?
Oh, it was great. I watched it with Franca Barbara, you know, and uh-huh. It was great. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Anyway, man, what do you say we call it?
Cool. All right, well, have a good night. Another good week.
All right. Hey, you have a good night. Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.